Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, well, I hope everybody's having a lovely day. I have Dr. Peter Pressman with me today from the University of Colorado Hospital. Hello, Peter.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I have been so excited to get you on the show today. My goodness. You have become one of my favorite people because I send several clients to you. Would you please tell my listeners what your specialty is at University of Colorado Hospital?
Sure, and thank you. You're very kind. I'm a cognitive and behavioral neurologist. I particularly focus on frontotemporal dementias and primary progressive aphasias.
Okay. That is a big deal to me, Peter. I don't know if I told you this, but my brother has frontotemporal dementia, and he has the behavioral type.
Mm.
And it's been very difficult on my family for about 10 years. And I'm excited that University of Colorado Hospital has brought you there because prior to this, we didn't have anybody within a five-state region studying this particular disease, did we?
No, it's generally pretty understudied and misunderstood.
It absolutely is. So could you explain to the listeners what frontotemporal disease is? We used to call it Pick's disease, and now it's frontotemporal. And could you just explain the different types of it and maybe from a clinical standpoint?
Sure. The terminology is pretty confusing. So the term frontotemporal dementia actually refers to at least three different types of syndrome. So when I say syndrome, I mean something that's characterized by certain symptoms. The first and most common is called the behavioral variant of frontotemporal dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And the behavioral variant of FTD is associated with changes in personality and in social function and in emotional functioning.
Mm-hmm.
The other two forms of frontotemporal dementia are considered primary progressive aphasias, meaning that they impact language, among other things, but predominantly language. There's the non-fluent variant of primary progressive aphasia, or PPA, and there's the semantic variant. In the non-fluent variant, as suggested by the name, people start really struggling to speak. They have a hard time making their mouths form the words that they want to, and it can be a real kind of tortured experience as they try to get that word out.
Mm-hmm.
In the semantic variant, people lose the concept of what a word means. And in fact, as the disease progresses, they can lose meaning that goes beyond the word. So for example, while initially they may forget the word, say, apple, later on they may forget what an apple is, if it's a fruit or something else entirely.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because some of the families that come to me and need assistance have had variations of these. And just for my listeners, I call them Caregiver Nation and Friends with Diagnosis. What it presents as an example is a lot of families will say, this isn't the person I married. Suddenly, they're acting very strange. They're behaving almost like a teenager, or they're hypersexual. They can't control their impulses in the behavioral side of this. Is that a fair statement?
It's true of the behavioral variant, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a wide array of different types of behavior changes that you can see. One of the most common is actually apathy, a loss of desire to do those things that the person previously enjoyed. That's also followed shortly by changes in empathy. So someone who is warm and caring beforehand may become more cool and distant, and sometimes even really uncaring. They may become disinhibited, as you've suggested before. So a classic sign would be eating a lot of sweets, or in more severe stages of the disease, maybe just swiping candy off the shelves of grocery stores. Not not, you know, necessarily maliciously, but just because they can't stop themselves from grabbing something that sweet and tasty.
Mm-hmm. And at the frontal temporal conference that I was at recently, and you were there, you were the leader of the conference, actually. And it really struck me when Hal Wortsman, a physician with the VA, he mentioned that people with the behavioral variant especially may have an impulse and they know what they're doing is wrong, but they can't stop that impulse to do what it is they want to do. Why is that?
Yeah, so Dr. Wortsman is really focused on the legal implications of FTD, mm-hmm. which currently for many legal definitions of insanity, you have to not know that what you're doing is wrong. But people with FTD frequently know, at least on one level, that what they're doing is wrong. What's changing is something a little bit more fundamental, their ability to control it nevertheless, and sometimes perhaps their ability to care that what they're doing is wrong. Again, I think that what we call behavioral variant frontotemporal dementia actually encapsulates a wide array of different behavior changes. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge component within frontotemporal dementias can be relatively spared. And for this reason, classic cognitive tests frequently miss them. So I might be able to do a test of memory and other aspects of thinking, and somebody with BVFTD will do pretty well. What I'm not testing and where their real problem is that everyday social interaction. And sometimes the comments that are written in the sidelines of those cognitive tests are more informative for BVFTD than the actual test score itself.
Oh, can I tell you just how brilliant I think that is? I can't imagine how difficult your job is. Just seeing my brother, who can perform very well when he's talking to you, and you would never dream that he has a type of dementia like this. You would think he was perfectly normal.
Yeah, and sometimes that's common in many different types of dementia. I've seen cases where somebody will interact fairly normally for a while, and then they'll have some impulse and, you know, drive across the state before losing all their gas in the middle of nowhere.
Isn't that something? And then one of the other types, and we'll talk more about it when we come back from our break, but I've had clients, Dr. Pressman, that have had the PPA that you talked about, the primary progressive aphasia, where they may only say just a couple of phrases like, God bless you, I love you, God bless you, I love you, over and over, or repeat numbers, or repeat what you say.
So that's interesting. So speech changes in all of these disorders is a particular interest of mine. And in primary progressive aphasia, like all forms of neurodegenerative illness, there is a slow erosion of the previous ability. So it usually doesn't start off as a sudden loss of all words but a few.
Mm-hmm.
The repetition of words, like what you're discussing, right, where they just say the same thing over and over and over,
mm-hmm.
You can see that in particularly, say, the non-fluent variant in more advanced stages where they've held on to one phrase that they really want to make sure is conveyed. But you can also see it in the behavioral variant with kind of obsessive quality to speech called echolalia or sometimes palilalia, where speech is just repeated over and over and over and over.
Right. It's really a fascinating subject, and I'm so glad to have you here. If you can hold on with us for a few minutes, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
We're back, and I have Dr. Peter Pressman from the University of Colorado Hospital Neurology Department with me today, and I'm so glad to have you here. We're talking about an important subject that is very misunderstood. So, may I call you Peter?
Yes, of course.
Peter, can you explain what causes this? Now, I want to just say before you start, my mom had the C9orf mutation, and we think that's how my brother got it. What does that mean to you?
Okay. So there are lots of ways to answer what causes something. Mm-hmm. And the broad answer is we don't know. Like most form of neurodegenerative diseases, like Alzheimer's or Lewy body disease, we don't ultimately know what causes frontotemporal dementias. That said, we do know that, one, these genes can be associated with developing the disease later on. So C9orf72 is a genetic variant where if you have a sufficient number of repeats, you are likely to develop a frontotemporal dementia or perhaps amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's mm-hmm. disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's also true that in these disorders, there are certain proteins that are deposited in or around the brain. Whether those cause the problem or just a sign of the trouble is hotly debated in the field. Going back to genes briefly, each gene, and there are three main mutations that are involved with frontotemporal dementia, though there are several kind of lesser known, rarer mutations.
Mm-hmm.
The three main mutations are associated with specific patterns of proteins that are deposited on the brain. This is helpful to us actually for clinical trials because unlike Alzheimer's disease, if somebody comes in with, say, the behavioral variant of frontotemporal dementia, it's very hard for me to predict what proteins are misfolding.
Mm-hmm.
So in Alzheimer's disease, I can predict that beta amyloid and tau will be misfolded in the brain, and perhaps by giving this trial agent, this drug, we might be able to address that misfolded protein.
Mm-hmm.
In frontotemporal dementia, a certain amount of the time, it's due to a misfolding of tau, and another percentage of the time, another protein is involved called TDP43. And there are different variations of each of those proteins. So it can be hard to predict what we would aim for with a clinical trial unless we have a known genetic variant. So in C9orf72, we can predict that this is going to be associated with a problem in TDP43. And so perhaps there is a clinical trial that will be specifically able to help someone in that situation.
Wow. The knowledge you have to even take this on is unbelievable. Well, let me ask you this. It does affect people between 44 and 64, correct?
Oh, yes.
And can people that are older or younger get it?
Yeah. So there's what we would call a wide bell curve. So the average age at which somebody gets a frontotemporal dementia is younger than that of Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And in people under the age of 65, it is almost as common a cause of dementia as Alzheimer's disease.
Wow.
I think the youngest form, the youngest patient that I have heard of was somebody in their 20s. And I have seen patients develop this in their 70s and 80s as well. However, if somebody is having these sort of personality changes and they are in, you know, middle age, in your late 40s and 50s, rather than saying this is a midlife crisis or, you know, they're just kind of struggling with work-related stress or anything else, sometimes it's worth considering whether or not there might be another problem going on, like frontotemporal dementia.
Oh, that is so true. So I have to ask you, your clinic is facing this head on. When did you open the clinic out at University of Colorado Hospital, and why did you open it?
Well, I trained at the University of California, San Francisco's Memory and Aging Center, which has a real focus in frontotemporal dementias. And when I came out here to Denver, it became pretty apparent to me that there wasn't really anybody else around who had that specific training and background. And so in a way, I just kind of stepped into it by default. There was certainly a need, and one of the first things that I did is I went around to talk to some of the local support groups who are very active, very enthusiastic people, and tried to get a sense for what they perceived as being the most important needs in the area for them, get a sense of how I might be most helpful. I have to say that while there's not a lot of dedicated medical expertise for frontotemporal dementias here, the local support groups are really strong.
Well, I have to tell you, I am very proud of the fact that when I was working at the Alzheimer's Association and my brother received this diagnosis from Mayo Clinic, I asked Linda Mitchell, our CEO, if we could start an FTD support group, and we did on Downing Street at Porter Hospital, and I believe it's still going today.
It's still going strong.
I am so happy about that because families don't know what to do. It's a devastating diagnosis. It's a devastating disease because your family member just changes. What are some of the early signs that families should look for?
That's a really good question, and it's a real emphasis in our field, again, where early detection of these diseases is probably our best hope for intervening in a way that could be meaningful. That said, personality changes can be subtle, they can be hard to detect, and they can be both easily overread, where, you know, if somebody just has a bad day, you don't want to jump to the diagnosis of frontotemporal dementia because they snapped at you, where that would be unusual for them.
Right.
And you also don't want to just kind of brush this off as depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. If, in fact, this is neurodegenerative. So any sort of ongoing personality change, something that is persistent and worsening over time, particularly, is enough to raise suspicions. And it's not uncommon that the first medical provider that a family would talk to might be a psychiatrist or a counselor because these changes are so personal. And hopefully that psychiatrist or counselor will also be on the lookout for other problems, such as difficulty with concentration, difficulty with organization. However, all those things are also very common in other diseases. So making a good, clean diagnosis as soon as possible is a real challenge.
Boy, I bet it is. And when we come back after this break, I want to talk to you about how we can help the families as well. And then taking us through this disease, what does it look like at the end of life? Because it's such an unknown disease, and there's so many questions around it. There's a few more I want to ask you. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
All right. Well, stick with me, folks, and we'll be right back.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, we're back, and I'm talking with Dr. Peter Pressman about frontotemporal dementia. Listeners, you know this is near and dear to my heart. I've had my brother on the show several times. I've talked about this at length because it fascinates me and because I care. Families feel alone. They feel confused. They don't understand why their loved one is acting like a different person all of a sudden in a lot of different ways. And then sometimes, like we talked about earlier, it can affect your language. So, Dr. Pressman, how do we intervene and help not only the person with diagnosis, but their caregiver and their family as well?
Let me start by saying one of the things that we would not want to do for somebody diagnosed with a frontotemporal dementia. Very commonly, people will try to prescribe the same medications used in Alzheimer's disease for someone with a frontotemporal dementia. I think the thought process is that, you know, if it's a dementia, maybe a cholinesterase inhibitor like Aricept or tinepazil will be helpful. Mm-hmm. But really, in frontotemporal dementias, there is no cholinergic deficit. That particular neurotransmitter, acetylcholine, hasn't been affected. And so you're not giving anything back to the brain that went missing. Mm-hmm. So there's really no reason to think it will help, and there's some reason to think, you know, small studies and so on, that this may be harmful. So we try to avoid those medications once the diagnosis is made. Instead, sometimes we will turn towards medications that impact the neurotransmitter serotonin, which has been shown, again, in small studies, to likely be low in the brains of people with frontotemporal dementias. Mm-hmm. More importantly, I think, than all these medical kind of changes that we can offer people, we offer guidance and we try to offer an understanding of what this person is going through. It is very different than a run-of-the-mill dementia like Alzheimer's because personality is one of the very first things affected, and often because people are so young when they develop the dementia.
Right.
So whereas, you know, somebody who is in 75 who gets Alzheimer's, as hard and devastating as that may be, they are likely, or at least more likely, to be retired, to have their affairs in order, to not necessarily be planning on several more years of income.
Mm-hmm.
This is not true of frontotemporal dementias, and the economic impact can also be even weightier than that of Alzheimer's.
Right.
So helping plan for the future, helping guide towards appropriate social resources is, I think, one of the more important things that we can offer. And as you know, in certain conditions, we may want to discuss genetic testing. and help guide people through that complex decision-making process as well.
I like that. I'll tell you what I do, and you tell me if I'm doing the right thing. When families are working with me, and I've learned this from my brother, I tell them the person that you're talking to, especially if they have the behavioral type, can't use judgment and reasoning for guidance. So when I'm talking to my brother, if he is asking me something and he's getting a little repetitive or way too focused on, laser focused on something, I use short sentences to say something to him. I try not to make it a discussion. So for example, he wanted to sing at a party I was having recently as a fundraiser for Dr. Potter. And I said, Dave, this isn't an open mic night. You can't sing at the party. And I just have to tell him that. I can't have the discussion with him of, oh, I'm really sorry. We're not really doing it that way and blah, 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 blah. I just have to say to him short sentences. If somebody says, I'm in a bad mood. I woke up this morning and I'm just really grouchy. I just tell caregivers to say, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Can I get you a cup of coffee?
Yeah, I think keeping things simple, keeping things short is key. I also think it's important to remember that the kind of habitual ways that we have grown used to communicating with another person over the several years that mm-hmm. we've known them are no longer likely to work.
Right.
So new habits need to be formed.
Right.
And some of them may seem overly simplistic. One of the kind of neatest tricks that I heard from a caregiver support group was when the person that they cared for was going off on a tangent or behaving inappropriately, they would call him on his cell phone, which was always in his pocket, just enough to break that routine, break that habit.
I like
it. And get him out of it, just to distract him for just long enough. And there's all sorts of little tips and tricks like that that can be used to make life a little bit more comfortable.
Right. So I have to ask you, and we've got about 3 minutes left, what's on the research horizon? What do you think we know, or let's put it this way, what do you think we know now that we didn't know 10 years ago?
There's actually been a lot of development, say, within the last 10 years. The entire story for C9ORF72, that's developed within the last 10 years, for example, and it's now thought to be the most common genetic cause of frontotemporal dementia. I'm an optimist. I think you have to be in this field. I do think that we are making headway, particularly in the genetic variants. I have particular hope for a genetic mutation called progranulin, just because the mechanism of that seems relatively straightforward. And mm-hmm. so clinical trials are moving forward with that. Because frontotemporal dementia is less common than Alzheimer's disease, it can be harder to get sufficient numbers of research participants and volunteers to really know what we're doing with great confidence. So in Alzheimer's, it's not too difficult to pull together thousands of patients, whereas in frontotemporal dementia, that can be a real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, I think the people who do research in this field are enormously dedicated, and they're all over the world. I just remotely attended an international conference in Australia, and it's just inspiring to hear about all the efforts that are being made, not just locally or in the United States, but in Japan, Australia, and elsewhere.
That is fantastic. I can't tell you how grateful I am for you to be on the show today, because I want our friends with diagnosis and their family members, my Caregiver Nation, to know that we care deeply about you, and you've got brilliant minds like my guest today, Dr. Peter Pressman, out there fighting on your behalf, and as he just told you, all around the world. Peter, you have been amazing, and I thank you for everything that you do. Is it possible for me to put your information on my website so that we can have people call if they're interested in being in your research?
Yes, certainly. And I'd also just like to applaud all of those who are looking after people with frontotemporal dementias. It is a challenging task sometimes, but there's a lot of meaning to be found in there, too.
Yeah, there sure is. Well, you're awesome, and I'm grateful for you being at the University of Colorado Hospital. Thank you again for being on the show today. This has been incredible. And for my folks in Australia who are going to be listening on Tuesday, you know you've got some stuff in your back pocket as well. Thank you, Peter, and hope you'll join us again on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.